Good afternoon. Welcome to the Sequel Communications earnings call for the second quarter. Just to let you know, all lines will be muted during the presentation portion of the call, with an opportunity for questions and answers at the end. At this time, I'd like to introduce your host, Mr. Pete Abel, Senior Vice President of Corporate Communications. You may proceed, Mr. Abel.
Thank you. Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to this discussion of our second quarter 2015 results for Sequel Communications Holdings One LLC and its subsidiaries, which do business as Suddenlink Communications. Before we get started today, we'd like to remind you that certain statements made during this conference call might be considered forward-looking statements within the meaning of the Private Securities Litigation Act of 1995. Those statements are subject to the various risks and uncertainties described in our annual report and our quarterly report for the second quarter of 2015, which are posted to our website. These risks and uncertainties could cause actual future results to differ materially from the results expressed or implied by any forward-looking statements made on this call. The information discussed today will be based on our earnings release for the 3 months ended June 30, 2015. The earnings release, along with our quarterly report and a set of slides for today's call, have been posted to the Investor Relations section of our website at suddenlink.com. If you'd like to follow along, the slides for this morning's call can be found on the Presentations page of the Investor Relations website. Our earnings release compares actual and pro forma financial and operating results for the second quarters of 2015 and 2014. Today, our presenters will focus on year-over-year pro forma results. This pro forma information reflects the divestiture of Small Cable Systems on December 1, 2014, and the acquisition of cable systems from New Wave Communications on October 1, 2014. With that, I'll now turn the call over to our Chairman and CEO, Jerry Kent. Jerry?
Hello, everyone. Thanks for joining us. Turning to page 4 of the slides posted on our website, I'd like to first provide a very brief update on our acquisition agreement with Altice. Since signing that agreement in May, Altice has obtained the financing it sought for the transaction. The proceeds from the bonds they issued are currently in escrow, and details are summarized in our quarterly report. We've also made steady progress on securing local and state government approvals and on making required filings with the relevant federal authorities. To date, the overall process has gone rather smoothly, and pending all required approvals, we continue to expect the transaction to close in the fourth quarter. Beyond these points, please remember that we are still relatively early in the approval process, and for that reason, we'll not have additional details to share on the subject at this time. Accordingly, the balance of our prepared remarks and our answers to any questions you might have today will be limited to a discussion of our second quarter results and general industry matters. Turning into the second quarter, we're very pleased to report financial and operating results that exceeded our expectations and further demonstrate the soundness of our long-term growth strategies. As noted on page 5, revenue in the second quarter this year was up 4.7% over the second quarter last year, due primarily to significant customer growth over the trailing 12 months in our residential internet and commercial internet and phone businesses, where we're hitting on all cylinders. Specifically, business internet and phone customers combined were up nearly 15,000 units, or 15.4%, in the trailing 12 months, while residential internet customers were up more than 75,000 units, or 6.8% in the same period. We also continue to build on our recent success with upselling residential internet customers to higher speeds. Growth in EBITDA before non-recurring expenses was also strong, up 8.2% in the second quarter 2015 versus the year-ago period. That's well above our recent historical average of approximately 6% year-over-year growth in EBITDA before one-time expenses. The current period's year-over-year EBITDA growth was largely driven by the aforementioned growth in revenue and high-margin internet and commercial services, along with year-over-year reductions in certain direct expenses, and Mary will provide additional details on these improvements later in the presentation. Furthermore, as noted on page 6, even with our ongoing investments in Operation Gigaspeed, we continue to generate significant free cash flow of $69.3 million in the second quarter of 2015 and that's up 8.2% over the year-ago period. Now, as mentioned on prior calls, due to the major changes we made to customer lineups in 2014, we postponed our normal schedule of annual rate adjustments from the fourth quarter of last year to the late first and early second quarters of this year. The completion of those rate adjustments in May also contributed to the earlier noted improvements we achieved in year-over-year growth rates for revenue and EBITDA during the second quarter. Combined with seasonal factors, these rate adjustments also impacted unit trends during the second quarter. In the second quarter of each year, we contend with the migration of students out of the college towns we serve and the movement of our seasonal Arizona customers. Adding rate adjustments to those seasonal factors explains much of the delta, we believe, in PSU trends during the second quarter this year versus the year-ago period. While churn in the first quarter of 2015 was essentially the same as the year-ago period, total PSU churn in the second quarter this year was up modestly over the same period last year, an indicator of the impact of rate adjustments. Looking specifically at basic video, the second quarter of last year, when we lost nearly 19,000 basic video customers, was our best second quarter ever in this category. From 2009 through 2013, our average second quarter net loss in basic video was approximately 23,000 units. The loss of approximately 29,000 basic video customers during the second quarter this year exceeds that average by 6,000 customers. And we believe the vast majority of this difference is attributable to this year's rate increases. Note that in prior years, there were no second quarter rate increases. These factors and related analysis give us confidence that the loss of Viacom programming late last year continues to diminish as a factor in our business. Contrasting this limited impact with the price demanded for Viacom programming, the obvious conclusion remains that we made the right decision. A final note on basic video. It's important to remember that our trailing 12-month trend will continue to be burdened by the what was expected bubble of video disconnects we experienced in the fourth quarter last year until full year results for 2015 are available. Now, if you normalize basic video losses in the fourth quarter of 2014 to what happened in prior years, our trailing 12-month basic video loss through June 30th this year would have been approximately 3.4%, which is relatively in line with our long-term basic video trend. By limiting video losses and achieving significant growth in our other lines of business, we continue to achieve outstanding growth in customer relationships. In fact, we set a new record of over 12,000 customer relationships gained in the first half of 2015. That's 11% better than the same period in 2014, which was a record year for customer relationship net gains. And it's remarkably better than the approximately 700 relationships we gained on average in the first half of the trailing 5 years. Looking at the trailing 12 months, residential relationships were up more than 33,000, or 2.4% through June 30th this year. That is the fifth consecutive quarter in which we've had trailing 12-month growth in customer relationships of over 2%. Also, the company is in excellent shape and well-positioned for future growth. And important to that future growth are our continued investments in Operation Gigaspeed, which is summarized on page 7. From this project inception in late 2014 through the first 6 months of 2015, we had upgraded internet speeds in 88 cable systems serving over 1 million internet customers. This further solidifies our market-leading position in internet services. What's more, in early July, we launched our first 1-gig markets, including Greenville and Rocky Mount, North Carolina, Bryan and College Station, Texas, and Nixon, Missouri. Together, these communities represent approximately 8% of our internet customers. And now we're planning additional gigabit service launches later this year, along with other speed upgrades. With that, I'll now turn the call over to Tom McMillan for a more detailed discussion of our second quarter operating results and Operation Gigaspeed. Tom.
Thanks, Jerry, and good afternoon, everyone. I'll start by providing more detail on our customer results, beginning on page 9. At June 30, we had nearly 1.44 million residential customer relationships, up more than 33,000 relationships, or 2.4% in the trailing 12 months, Aiding this growth in customer relationships was our success in adding over 100,000 non-video customers in the trailing 12 months, representing 31.2% year-over-year growth. At June 30, non-video customers represented approximately 29.4% of residential customer relationships. Turning to our unit results, which are summarized on page 10, we had approximately 2.84 million residential PSUs at June 30, an increase of nearly 30,000 or 1.1% year-over-year. With commercial units, which are summarized on a later page, we gained more than 44,500 PSUs, or 1.5% in the trailing 12 months. As Jerry noted, growth in total PSUs was led by growth in residential internet, which was up more than 75,000 units, or 6.8% in the trailing 12 months. As a result, residential data penetration of estimated homes passed was 38.1% as of June 30 this year, up from 36.1% as of June 30 last year. At the end of the second quarter, over 80% of our high-speed internet customers had download speeds of 50 meg or higher, and we were approaching 15% of our high-speed internet customers with download speeds of 75 meg or higher. What's more, our nearly 81% selling rate of 50 meg or higher services was more than 9 times higher than the comparable sell-in rate for the same quarter a year ago. And our nearly 30% sell-in rate of 75 meg or higher services was up from less than 1% sell-in rate for those services in the year ago period. With a combination of current marketing programs and Operation GigaSpeed, including our near-term move towards making 50 meg our flagship speed in a growing number of markets, we expect continued success in serving more customers with higher speeds in the months ahead. A complement to our high-speed internet service is Suddenlink Wi-Fi at Home. Recently, we set a new record for this service. Our year-to-date net gain of more than 45,600 Suddenlink Wi-Fi at Home customers was our best first-half performance ever. In the second quarter, our sell-in rate for this service was 63.6% of new high-speed internet connects. And in the trailing 12 months, Wi-Fi at Home grew 31% with a net gain of over 95,000 units, bringing our total customers with this service to more than 408,000, exceeding one-third of all internet customers. Since launching this service, we have successfully grown it to nearly $50 million in annual revenues. On telephony, we finished the quarter with over 557,000 residential customers, up nearly 23,000 units or 4.3% in the trailing 12 months. As a result, residential phone penetration of estimated homes passed was 20.8% as of June 30 this year, up from 20.4% as of June 30 last year. On basic video, we finished the quarter with over 1.1 million customers. As Jerry mentioned, the trailing 12-month basic video trend will continue to be burdened by the expected bubble of video disconnects we experienced in the fourth quarter last year until full-year results for 2015 are available. Next, I'd like to briefly touch on commercial unit results for the second quarter of 2015. On page 11, we note that our more than 44,000 commercial phone customers at June 30 resulted from adding over 8,000 customers in the trailing 12 months, representing 22.3% growth. Over the same period, we added nearly 7,000 commercial data customers, ending the second quarter with nearly 68,000 for a year-over-year growth rate of 11.2%. In addition to its impact on the residential side of the business, Operation GigaSpeed is also helping us improve the services we offer our commercial customers, and these enhanced services are fueling our continued market share growth in this segment. Overall, we've had solid success adding commercial customer relationships, up 8% during the trailing 12 months, nearly 94,000 at June 30. Of those commercial relationships, more than half were bundled customers, taking two or more commercial services from us. In the trailing 12 months, bundled commercial relationships increased 16.7%. We also continue to see solid gains in our carrier services group. As of June 30, we had successfully completed and initiated billing for nearly 1,800 fiber to the tower tenants, with over 115 more on signed contracts and in the process of being installed. I'd now like to conclude my remarks this morning with a few more details about Operation Gigaspeed, building on what Jerry said and summarized on page 12. First, the nearly $40 million in capital expenditures we invested in this project in the first half of the year supported a number of critical steps, including various network enhancements and CMTS upgrades. Project to date, as Jerry noted, we have increased speeds in 88 cable systems serving more than 1 million Internet customers, or more than 87% of our total Internet customers at June 30. In the 88 markets where initial upgrades have been completed, our flagship speed has more than tripled from 15 meg to 50 meg, and our top speed increased to 150 meg in most areas, with five markets having now completed the next phase of the project, offering speeds as high as 1 gigabit. Through the balance of the year, we expect to complete initial speed upgrades in another 22 markets, serving an additional 70,000 customers, and launch our 1 gigabit service in a total of 28 markets, serving more than 400,000 Internet customers. Note that in the markets where we launch the 1 gig service, our other standard speeds become 50, 100, and 200 meg. And as that happens, former 75 meg customers are automatically upgraded to the 100 meg service, while 100 and 150 meg customers are upgraded to the 200 meg service at no additional cost to these customers, which further reinforces our leading competitive position. Thank you for your time today. I'll now turn things over to Mary for a closer look at our financial results. Mary?
Thanks, Tom. Today I'll discuss financial results for Sequel Communications Holdings One LLC and subsidiaries for the second quarter of 2015, adding to what Jerry and Tom have already provided. I'll also discuss our balance sheet and liquidity position. Let's look first at revenue, which is summarized on page 14. Total second quarter 2015 revenue was $608 million, representing growth of 4.7% or approximately $27.3 million over the second quarter of 2014. This year-over-year increase in total revenue was largely attributable to an 11.5% growth in commercial revenue, including a 16.2% growth in commercial high-speed data, on-net carrier services, and telephone revenue on a combined basis, and a 16.6% growth in Internet revenue as a result of the trailing 12-month growth in units and our success in upselling customers to higher speeds, as Tom has described. The revenue increases were offset in part by a year-over-year decline in advertising revenue, due primarily to the transition from a record-setting political ad sales year in 2014 to 2015, a year with no major elections. Video revenue also declined year over year, due largely to video customer losses in the last 12 months and reduced digital and premium revenue. These factors were offset in part by increases in broadcast retransmission revenue, converter rental revenue for HDTV and DVR-capable digital converters, pay-per-view revenue, and the impact of video rate adjustments, which were completed in May, as noted earlier. Recall that our commercial lines of business, which are embedded in the video, high-speed internet, telephone service, and other revenue categories, are comprised of commercial and bulk video, commercial high-speed data, commercial telephone, and on- and off-net carrier services. In the second quarter of 2015, revenue of $91.3 million from these commercial sources represented approximately 15% of total revenue. Turning to page 15, we note that our adjusted EBITDA margin improved as reductions in certain direct expenses largely offset growth in operating expenses. As a result, total operating costs and expenses in the second quarter of 2015 grew a modest 1.8% over the year-ago period. Regarding direct expense reductions, we achieved year-over-year direct telephone expense savings due to the completion of Operation Reliant migrations in the fourth quarter of 2014. In fact, our direct telephone expense savings are more significant than we originally expected. We also saw a year-over-year decline in total programming costs in the second quarter, which was primarily a result of the loss of basic video customers in the trailing 12-month period, the removal of Viacom programming, and lower digital and premium expense, offset in part by an increase in broadcast retransmission and pay-per-view expenses, as well as the cost of new channels launched and the impact of contractual rate increases. On a per-basic video subscriber basis, which controls video subscriber losses, combined basic and retransmission programming costs increased 7.5% in the second quarter 2015 versus the year-ago quarter. This rate of increase was muted in comparison to recent years due to the replacement of Viacom programming. The noted year-over-year reductions in direct expenses in the second quarter were offset in part by an increase in broadcast retransmission expense, as well as increases in direct high-speed internet circuit costs, labor and employee-related costs, and marketing and bad debt expenses. High-speed internet circuit costs increased as we added capacity to support growth in our residential and commercial internet businesses. Labor and employee-related expenses increased due to the impact of annual salary increases and headcount increases, primarily in door-to-door sales and technical operations. Marketing costs increased from the impact of targeted direct mail initiatives to support our offer strategy aimed at increasing market share and growing our customer base. And bad debt expense increased primarily because we standardized and accelerated write-off policies among our operating regions. Note also that our results in the second quarter included $300,000 of non-recurring expenses, primarily associated with the Altice acquisition agreement. Before the impact of non-recurring expenses, adjusted EBITDA for the second quarter 2015 was $244.6 million, which was up 8.2% over the same period in 2014 and resulted in an adjusted EBITDA margin before non-recurring costs of 40.2% versus 38.9% in the year-ago period. Adjusted EBITDA after non-recurring expenses was up 9.4% and resulted in an adjusted EBITDA margin of 40.2% versus 38.5% in the year-ago quarter. Loss from operations for the second quarter 2015 was $19.1 million, which was primarily driven by an increase in non-cash share-based compensation expense due to the equity valuation resulting from the Altice acquisition agreement, offset in part by a decrease in depreciation and amortization expense and improved operating results. The noted increase in non-cash share-based compensation expense also impacted our provision for current and deferred income taxes. That provision differs significantly from our estimate of full-year tax expense due primarily to differences in how non-cash equity compensation expense is treated under the effective tax rate versus statutory rate, and the significance of non-cash compensation expense relative to our full-year earnings before taxes. As the year progresses, we expect our provision for income taxes to reduce significantly in subsequent quarters, coming in line with our full-year forecast of $6.5 million in cash taxes. We also expect to use $25 to $50 million of our NOL balance, which stood at $1.64 billion as of December 31, 2014. Turning to page 16, we note that capital expenditures for the second quarter 2015 were $113.5 million, or 18.7% of revenue, inclusive of $9.9 million for Operation Gigaspeed. For the 6 months ended June 30, capital expenditures were approximately $248.4 million, or 20.8% of revenue, inclusive of $39.6 million for Operation Gigaspeed. Per the guidance offered on our prior calls, we still expect full year 2015 capital expenditures to be approximately $480 to $490 million, inclusive of approximately $85 million for Operation GigaSpeed. Currently, we expect full year 2015 capital expenditures to represent less than 20% of revenue. On page 17, we summarize free cash flow results. In the second quarter of 2015, free cash flow of $69.3 million was up 8.2% from the year-ago period. This increase was due primarily to an increase in adjusted EBITDA, offset in part by an increase in property, plant, and equipment purchases driven by Operation GigaSpeed, and an increase in cash interest expense, primarily due to increased average indebtedness as a result of the notes issued in September 2014. As mentioned on prior calls, and as Jerry noted this afternoon, we expect to continue generating significant free cash flow, even with the continued investments we're making in Operation GigaSpeed. Turning to page 18, you'll see that as of June 30th, the face amount of our debt outstanding was approximately $5.08 billion, comprised of $2.31 billion of senior secured term loans at Sequel Communications, LLC, $1.50 billion of 6.375% senior notes at Sequel Communications Holdings One, $1.25 billion of 5.125% senior secured notes at Sequel Communications Holdings One, and $18.9 million of capital leases and other obligations at Sequel Communications, LLC. At June 30, we had approximately $192.5 million of cash on hand and approximately $463.5 million available under our $500 million revolving credit facility after taking into account $36.5 million of outstanding letters of credit. Our secured bank leverage, as calculated under our credit agreement, was 2.41 times, which was in compliance with our bank covenant with significant cushion. Our total leverage ratio, as calculated under the indentures governing both the 6.375% and 5.125% senior notes, was 5.34 times. Also at June 30, we had no interest rate hedges in place, and the weighted average cost of our debt was 4.75%. Finally, on page 19, we summarize the reasons we believe our company is well positioned for the future, all of which have been discussed in our remarks this afternoon. Before I turn the call back over to the operator to facilitate questions, I would like to remind everyone that this is a public call, and we will generally refrain from discussing information other than what is disclosed in our earnings release and quarterly report. In addition, please remember that, beyond what Jerry noted during his remarks, we will not have further comment today nor take any questions on the Altice acquisition agreement, the closing process, or the post-closing future. Operator?
Certainly. Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question, please press star followed by one on your touchtone keypad. If you would like to remove that question, please press star followed by two. If you are using a speakerphone, please pick up the handset before using the keypad. Once again, if you would like to ask a question, please press star followed by one. The first question comes from the line of Jason Kim with Goldman Sachs. Please proceed.
Hey, thanks a lot, guys. The first question is, I know a lot of things can change just given the back-to-school season on the horizon, but any early read into how the third quarter subscriber trends are looking so far?
We don't comment on forward-looking statements and subscriber statistics, but I will note that even if I could, back-to-school hasn't started. And so that is so important. July and the start of August are not big months for us, so I guess you can take that nothing completely out of the ordinary is happening right now, and we'll see what happens when the universities do come back and when our snowbirds come back in Arizona.
Makes sense. And then the margin performance was pretty strong this quarter. I don't think I've seen a 40% margin from you guys in the past in any given quarter. Can you help us understand if there are any year-over-year comparison issues that we should be aware of during the quarter?
Well, I mentioned two of them, Jason, in my prepared remarks, and they're both pretty significant. One of them is we saw the full effect of our reduction in direct telephone expense because of the migration in Operation Reliant. So we see the full value of that in the second quarter versus the year-ago second quarter. And, in fact, we actually are performing and realizing direct expense improvements, if anything, greater than our expected case. And the other is, of course, the impact of the removal of the Viacom networks. That resulted in programming growth on a per-subscriber basis, as I mentioned, in the second quarter over the year-ago second quarter of 7.5%, which if you look back on, you know, other of our calls in recent years, that 7.5% quarter over the year-ago quarter growth is on the low side for growth in programming expense. And I think those two things had a very helpful in the aggregate impact on our overall reduction in direct expenses and the increase in our margin as a result.
Thanks for taking the questions.
Sure. Thank you.
The next question comes to the line of Michael Pace with J.P. Morgan. Please proceed.
Hi, thanks. Good afternoon. I'm wondering if you could give us a little more color on the rate increases that you did start taking at the end of the first quarter and into the second quarter. I believe there were some sports surcharges, some retransmission pass-through. Were there any just basic rate increases overall, or were the first two really the crux of that? And then will any of that roll into the third quarter on a sequential basis? I think you hinted that those were completed in May. So any help understanding the timing, the amount and timing of those would be great.
Sure, Mike, I'll take that. I would say that the majority of the rate adjustments that we did were in those two categories that you mentioned, retransmission consent, so our broadcast station surcharge, as well as the sports surcharge that we implemented. And to your point, those should flow through into the third quarter as well.
And I will say that they based upon some of the retransmission consent agreements, it was a big cycle for us. And I would say that it was a little higher than normal on the RTC pass-through. And combined with the sports surcharge, I'd say it's safe to say that they're a little higher on video than we've probably done recently.
But I guess to try and understand the flow through into Q3, if let's just say assume it was a dollar increase on a video bill, do we see 50% of that or 50 cents of that in the second quarter, and we'll still see more of that in the third quarter flow through, or is it much less?
It'll be much less than that in terms of the flow through.
Some regions were completed by the end of the first quarter,
right,
and then some regions, due to regulatory requirements of notification, actually that's why they went into May. Mm-hmm. So some regions will benefit from it, some won't, so you won't see the full benefit in Q3.
Some March, some April, little flow through into May.
Understood. And then on the high-speed data revenues, I guess a line item in your quarterly report of change in rates and impact of residential services, it's accelerating. And I'm wondering, I know you talked about sell-through of higher speeds, but have you raised rates for any high-speed data service? Or my understanding is that you're basically giving people the higher speeds for free, but are people then buying even higher speeds at higher rates? I'm just wondering what's driving that line.
Yeah, so as we mentioned, our sell-in of the higher speeds, those above our flagship speed, which is now 50 meg, so the sell-in of speeds above 50 meg is 30% plus. And obviously we're capturing more ARPU as a result of that. I'd also mention in terms of standalone Internet customers, after their first anniversary, they typically see a $10 rate adjustment on those as well. Our entry-level pricing during the period, the second quarter, was $35 for internet, for 50 meg internet service.
Understand. And then what about AT&T increasing, I guess, its fiber footprint? At least they've announced that, and I don't know where they are in that process following, I know the DirecTV deal just did close, but are you expecting any increase of AT&T fiber in any of your footprint, and can you quantify that if so?
Well, I haven't seen, and I don't think they've announced their exact plans, so we're not privy to where AT&T is going to spend that money, and in fact, it was just recently announced as part of their transaction over DirecTV. From the in concessions with the FCC, so we really don't have any idea where that money is going to be spent.
Okay, and then just Mary, one final question. You talked about your direct telephone expenses being better than expected. What's roughly the annual run rate savings of that, and then when does that comp year over year where we don't see the benefit of that anymore?
Well, we completed our migrations in the fourth quarter of 2014. So to the extent once we get through all of 2015, then that won't be an issue in the comp. We had said that we expected $20 million of direct cost expense savings, you know, when the plan was fully implemented, and that when you factor in the capital requirements, which by the way are also all in the rearview mirror now, we had no incremental capital requirements, CapEx requirements to migrate in this quarter either. That's behind us. All in, it's less than a three-year payback. And less than, we said less than $50 million, and it will actually be more like $40 million, meaning that there was a less than $20 million CapEx requirement and a $20 million direct expense saving. That's what we had modeled, and we believe the direct expense savings will be better than $20 million. We haven't put out, and it's early, so it's hard to tell you exactly what that would be, Mike, but it's better than we had modeled, and it has been in this last quarter.
It'll be in the $2 million.
Yes.
Great. Thanks so much.
The next question comes from the line of Davis Hebert with Wells Fargo. Please proceed.
Good afternoon. Can you guys hear me?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, thanks. I just wanted to know on the Viacom, it's, you know, several quarters into you guys dropping that contract, and just wanted to make sure you felt like we were through all those headwinds on the subscriber side.
First of all, we replaced the Viacom programming with other programming. So we didn't just drop it. We added other channels that some are very valuable to our customers. I would say the bulk of the headwinds are definitely behind us. I would say there are some minimal lasting impact that certainly affects the Connect side of the business, but it's to numbers that, when you compare to what it would take to put Viacom programming back on, the cost that would take versus the customers that you would start saving, it's night and day. It's no doubt that we made the right financial decision and customer impacting decision.
Despite their ever declining viewership data for those Viacom channels, there were some number of people that were watching the shows and programming, so naturally there's going to be some small percentage of people.
And they still use social media and different ways to slam us and to try to get our customers to switch over. And you know, we've moved on and we've looked at it from the rearview mirror, but evidently they haven't.
But that might have some minimal impact, but not materially enough to be a real problem for us.
Got it. Thanks for correcting my terminology. That's actually what I meant to say. And then I wanted to go back to the AT&T point made earlier. You talked about expanding more markets for GigaSpeed, and I wanted to just ask if there's any certain carrier that you're targeting, whether it's CenturyLink or Frontier or AT&T, or is it more market-specific where there's a higher income demographic? Just kind of curious, you know, how you're attacking that rollout.
No, this is across the company, across the board. It'll be approaching 90% of our customer base that will have 1 gigabit service, mid to high 80s to be exact. And we are doing this because we think it's the right thing to do for our customers to continue to invest in really a market-leading internet service. And so it is against any and all competition. And with respect to AT&T, I'll just add that even if they continue to invest like they have with their UVerse service, that we are still far beyond their capabilities of providing speeds with what we're doing in our markets.
And just as a reminder, from just a wireline standpoint, AT&T's overlap with us is 62%. Frontier and CenturyLink are each in the 15% type range. Frontier will gain a little bit more percentages once they close on their pending acquisition with Verizon. That's wireline overlap. And we've also reported historically that AT&T's UVerse overlap with us is in the 6% range of our homes passed.
Mm-hmm.
So naturally today that footprint of those types of services is relatively small to begin with. So any expansion of that, you know, it's hard to know where they're going to find their 12 million passings.
Okay, great. Thank you so much.
Sure.
Once again, ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question, please press star followed by one. There are currently no further questions coming from the phone lines.
Great. Well, thank you, everyone. Thanks for your attention and interest in Suddenlink. We appreciate it, and have a good week.
Thank you.
Thank you.